Welcome along to the Diabetes Chat. It is Monday. We are here with our amazing guest speaker tonight, Sally Hendricks. Myself, Mary are hosting the session. But guys, get involved. Hashtag Diabetes Chat. You can request the microphone. Please come and get involved. Let us know any thoughts, any comments on tonight's chat with Sally. And if you want to get involved, please do. So this evening, our guest speaker is Sally Hendricks, 56, from Cape Town, South Africa. Sally has been a diabetes advocate for over 30 incredible years, diagnosed with type 1 diabetes 40 years ago. Sally had his leg amputation 2 years ago on the 19th of October, 2020. I'm trying to remember, was that during the lockdown times? It feels like forever since them days. Sally is a motivational speaker, not only for his community, but for World Health Organization. He also is a member and advocate of the DDoC community, board member of the Diabetes South Africa program, and director for the Persons with Disabilities City of Cape Town. Sally launched the Diabetes Amputee Community of South Africa in Sweden, Stockholm, in September 2022. And I had the great honor in meeting Sally there, and we had a good old chat. And Sally's passions and values are, and I quote this, "My disabilities and diabetes is a blessing. I will spread the lived experience to all four corners of the world." And tonight we have the amazing opportunity for Sally to come on and to spread his amazing lived experiences to everyone listening to the Diabetes Chat right now and on the podcast. So, Sally, welcome to the Diabetes Chat.
Hi, Tom. Thanks very much. Can you hear me?
All good, yes. How are you? Are
Yeah.
you okay?
No, I'm fine, thank you. And just sorry, I think Gary actually just asked the question
Yeah.
about the load shedding. Just to clarify things, what happens is that we have so much load sheddings that the cell towers don't actually have time to charge. So today was actually a beautiful day. We had about, you can say, 8 hours of no load shedding, and at 10 o'clock tonight, yeah, 8 o'clock your time, we actually went into 2 hours. So our cell towers are actually fully charged. So I'm honored to be here and have the time, and I've got some signals. But yes, Tom, my thank you for the introduction.
You are
My
welcome.
journey
So
is
what we'll do is we have a few different sections for tonight. Our first
okay.
section is a sort of quick fire round questions, and then we'll get to ask you some questions about your diabetes journey when you were diagnosed. And then Mary's going to head up a very important section talking about your complications and talk about stigmas and advice. Okay, so
Go
let's
ahead.
get to know you a little bit with our sort of fun 90 second questions, the quick fire questions, just to
Okay.
get to know you a little bit. So, what is your name and occupation?
Well, my name is Sally Hendricks. I am a IT specialist in SAP, the software SAP, Microsoft, and we do the skills development training for the city of Cape Town. So I'm actually employed at the city of Cape Town, and with my motivational speaking and in the diabetes world and my amputation, I've got involved with the EAP and wellness programs of the city of Cape Town, which involves the employer assist program. So that will be the program where we do the screening of the diabetes, the eye screening, and we've actually included now this year the vascular screening because of my amputation, which
Yes.
I'm very passionate about, and we've actually included that in our screening. So
And that's really important, isn't it?
that's yeah, that's right, yes. And
So
the importance of, sorry, go on.
when were you then diagnosed with diabetes? How old were you? So you've
Ah,
had diabetes 40 years, right?
yeah. I was diagnosed at the age of 12 with diabetes insipidus. And that is
What does that
actually
mean?
with insipidus is with the, it's actually insipidus is it's the organ diabetes. It's, and mine was actually the kidneys that when I started off. It's the same symptoms as diabetes mellitus, but they don't treat you with the insulin hormone. They treat you with the different types of hormones. And to tell you the truth, I cannot remember the names of those hormones because it was 12, I mean, I was 12 years old, and I was treated between the age of 12 and 17 with those hormones. And at the age of 17, I became type 1 when I actually fainted at college, and I woke up in hospital 2 days later because I was in a semi-coma. And yeah, the doctor told me that you now are type 1. And
And it must have
because
been a really it must have been a really challenging time, I guess, to have them years and then 17 to be diagnosed, I guess.
yeah, Tom, it was something that be at the beginning, just being diagnosed as a diabetic and not knowing the terminology between insipidus and mellitus and the different types of diabetes. It was overwhelming in a way that I didn't know the way forward for myself. Although I came or come from a diabetic family, that they were all type 2. My mother, my father, sister, and brother. They were all type 2s. And this is another drive that I've got because my whole family was diabetics, and I'm the sole survivor of my diabetic family. So this is the passion that I've got, is to actually.
So how was that time for you then when you were diagnosed with diabetes with your history with your family having type 2? You were diagnosed 17, a young adult and ready to conquer the world, shall we say, and you're diagnosed with diabetes. How was it for you and how was it for your family? Like, what was that time like? Was it challenging, like trying to learn more things?
Tom, the only panic that came over my mother when they told her that he's a type 1, and she knew everything about type 2.
Yes.
And she didn't know how to actually go about things because of there was, I mean, in those years, the education or the knowledge of diabetes, it was, please, you have to eat, and this was always stressed, don't eat sugar. Eat your vegetables. It wasn't a proper educational stream of how do you actually look after yourself as a type 1 because your pancreas does not secrete insulin, and it was quite challenging for
I
me.
can imagine.
I was actually in a panic for about 6 months. And my mother just told me that, Sally, I will take care of you to the best that I can. And I actually lived with the diets of the type 2s. I stayed away from all the sugary things. It was something that, with the type 1 education in the 70s, 80s, it wasn't there.
Yeah, of course, and it's so different to what it is now, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. And we didn't have which they call the glucose monitors at that time that they give to the public. Our sugar levels were actually tested once a month when you actually go to the clinic or the hospital. And
Wow.
so because only the hospitals or the clinics had
The equipment, right?
the equipment. So We played a guessing
So
game.
not only they say, right, you're 17, you're type 1 diabetic, off you go, but we'll see you in a month and we'll test your levels and we'll see where you're at. Imagine that now, guys. Like, that would be impossible, like, to think. Oh my gosh.
That would actually be impossible to a stage that today, when I actually, in fact, when I listened to the conversation, you were talking about pumps and the looping system and things.
Yeah.
My body was actually my CGM, and I could actually feel in later years, in my 20s, when being a type one for, you can say, 3 years, I knew exactly when my sugars were high or low. Not knowing my readings, only when I went to the doctor or the clinic, as to say, but the way they actually treated you, it was horrifying, you know. Oh, your sugars are high, what did you eat? And how could you actually monitor your monthly sugar levels and
Impossible,
come
right?
there? It's impossible. It's
And
impossible.
then to kind of have that blame culture, I guess,
There
from
we go.
what I'm hearing to say, come on, what have you done? Why have you done that? But how would you be able to manage that situation without no information? It's crazy.
And today, if I look back to all those years, the amount of data that we actually accumulate on our phones, on our receivers, it is bliss. It is something that you wish that this technology was then. You
Oh my
wish,
gosh, yeah.
you know.
So can you
And
then can you maybe tell us then, Sally, the sort of things that you had? So you said you obviously didn't finger prick, you didn't have a monitor, you had to go to your clinic appointment every month. What did you do to administer your insulin? Was it syringes before pens, I'm assuming?
That was the syringes and the vials that we had. And the only way that we could actually test our sugars to see, we had a little strip, a yellow strip that was in a reel that we had to pee in a cup. And that little strip would turn either, you can say, a little bit greener than the yellow strip, or which we call avocado green. Now, avocado green, the numbers would be, say, around about between 16 and 20 mmol, you know. And you always feared putting that little strip in the pee, you know. And because whatever you ate, they would tell you, you know. We didn't know of the bolus system, like, you know, give yourself extra insulin to so that you can actually reduce your levels, because you don't know, you didn't know that time what your levels
No.
was, you know. And if the strip stays yellow, you actually, you know, it's like a jumping for joy situation scenario where you think to yourself, oh, I'm managing my sugar levels, you know? So that was the only way of
And how
actually.
often would you do that? Is it once a day, a few times a day? Once, how often would you do it?
That you'd only do that in the morning, only in the morning,
Right. And
you
how long
know?
would it take? What was the process of it? Obviously, how long would it
The
take
pro.
to wait for the results?
Well, because we had, which, I mean, the fast acting insulin, okay, that we had, I can't even remember the name. I stand under correction, but we had to wait for 1 solid hour before eating so
Wow.
that the insulins could actually work properly. And sometimes my
How
mother used to
times have
say,
changed, right?
yeah. My mother would actually tell me, Sally, you know, just wait for another, say, 15 minutes more, go to the toilet, pee, and then we test, you know. But in that hour that you're waiting, you sat with a 2 liter bottle of water to wash out the excess sugar. So those were the times that They always say, drink water, drink water so that you can pee the excess sugar out. And we literally did that. And after the hour and 15 minutes, like my mother used to tell me, you test your pee again just to see, and then it's not the avocado green, it's slightly green, So then you know that your sugar levels is actually in a, which you can say, a controllable level of
Yes.
not becoming fatigued or you're tired or sleepy, your eyes is blurry, then you're okay. Then you can go for the day, So it was a process in the morning, waking up for school or college and then going off. But my fear then was, would I actually go into a coma again, like
Yeah.
when I was at college, And that was the greatest fear, because you never know what your readings are. And today, playing back on looking at my CGM or your glucometer or something, or I was just introduced to the G7, so I got that today, so I'll be testing
Wow.
that.
Congratulations.
Yeah, because they're launching the G7 first of February in South Africa, but the influencers and motivational speakers, we actually got it now a week before the time, or I think it's 2 weeks, 2 weeks before the time.
So can I
So
ask
just
then,
to test.
Sally, is
Yeah, sure.
what do you use now then to administer your insulin? Are you on pens or are you on a pump now?
No, I'm still on the and I'm having a meeting with Medtronics tomorrow, and that will be my next step into the diabetes world of getting the pump. So after 40 long years, I will be receiving the pump, and it is just wonderful, because I know the other questions will be related to my complications and things. So it is something that just coping with all the changes, Tom, it is been a challenging 40 years. Acceptance was always there. It was something that just going through all of the changes over the years and coping with it was something that sometimes I don't know how to actually put it over to another diabetic. But moving with change and technology, there is a certain amount of anxiety that you actually go through. And hoping that it doesn't fail or it will assist you to the level that you get a balance and certain satisfaction out of this device that is actually coming your way. So it is not that I'm oops up, but just to actually get the data so that another diabetic or a diabetic amputee, to prevent them from actually becoming an amputee, that's another goal that I've set out to motivate people to do the prevention checks and the screening, the scanning. And this is just something that has put me into a action mode for 2023. I just told myself the motivational speaking is fine, but taking them to the next level of action, going for the screening,
Action.
going for the scanning, taking better care of themselves, getting the balance of, I won't say life, but our diabetic life. Because if I classify the our diabetic life to mine, that has become a norm. For me, I don't know any other life than the diabetic life since the age of 12. And it's a norm, acceptance, inclusion, action. So 2023, I've actually put everything into the action direction for diabetes at this stage.
Let's do it. Absolutely. Well, Sally, what a fantastic start to our chat tonight. I think it's just been really, really interesting hearing about your journey with your diabetes and the story about checking your levels and your pens and syringes. I just want to finish before we head to Mary. One thing you like about diabetes. And one thing you don't like about diabetes, what would you say?
One thing that I like of diabetes, the networking, the meeting of people, encouraging people. It is just over the, can say, 30 years that I've been networking, I've actually came across lots of people that were down right under. And it is something that I love to bring them up to a level where they don't have to live through the depression, the anxiety alone. The other question that you asked me now, sometimes I don't know how to answer. It is liking diabetes, not liking diabetes. The norm has become a liking of diabetes. The suffering of diabetes is not pleasant. And I will tell everybody that it is not easy to live with diabetes. It's not. Nobody can come to me and tell me, I've got everything under control. Then what I do is my silence become quiet. And I will never actually go into a talk with a person because they might be in a permanent denial and they will never come out of that. So it is difficult to actually answer the like of diabetes and the not like of diabetes because of what I've experienced on a daily basis, where sometimes I don't want to get out of bed. I force myself, you know. So, Tom, I don't know if I actually put it in a way that if the listeners are actually listening on, it's difficult to actually answer those two questions because it
They're
is,
very hard questions, but I think you did. So thank you so much, Saleh. What we will do is we will now head to Mary, and I think this
Okay.
is going to be a very important topic.
Okay.
And as Mary said at the start of this evening, really is earlier on. Well, Diabetes Chat has been running now nearly a year. It's our 1 year anniversary in
Wow.
February. And
Congratulations.
thank you, buddy. We've spoke to so many amazing people from all over the world. We've had guest speakers, we've had people tuning in just like now. And how amazing and how is important that is. And like you said, one thing you like about diabetes is networking and connecting. And that's what we're doing. And we've connected with so many people, diabetes advocates, we've healthcare professionals, sports athletes, parents, you name it. And I think it's very, very important to talk and hear all them amazing perspectives of how we all manage and live with diabetes. And we have spoke about it a few times about complications of diabetes. And I know it's not necessarily the reality that it will happen to everyone or most people, and let's hope it doesn't. But it's important that we raise this awareness and we talk and we listen and we share. And we had, like Mary said, we had Daniel Newman that came on and he shared his journey with diabetes. He shared his chronic kidney disease, and that led on to him receiving his kidney transplant. And it's people like you, Sally, and Dan, who are just truly inspirational to everyone. And it's an honor to have you here talking to us. And I think this next section is so, so important. And it's just great to have you here. And I'm going to hand over to Mary. Over to you, Mary.
Ooh, no pressure, no pressure. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Mary.
I Listening to your story, there's like we're in different parts of the world, and I can, it's just like anything diabetes wise, you can relate to anybody with this the story. My first cousin was diagnosed in the 70s next door to us, and so like you talking about the testing and all. I remember Dorothy doing that in the 70s, and she was only 20 months, so she was totesy and tiny, and it's so interesting. I love hearing, love is the wrong word for it. I really get a lot of hearing out hearing from that story, everybody's diagnosis story. This topic on like your life, your lived experience around complications is something I know I personally hide from, like the topic, the finding out about it, and I really appreciate this moment for I know I'll personally learn a lot, and I'm really grateful that you're telling it, because there's nothing like a lived experience to understand. Can you tell us about the lead into like your amputation? Like what it felt like physically and mentally? Like, these are things you don't hear or read about in leaflets. And emotionally, like what was it like? Can you start at the start? Is there a start?
If I must start just for a few minutes, when I started off at the age of 12, my kidneys was actually starting to give in at that stage,
Is that
and
the insipidus part or
yeah,
like?
that's the insipidus part. So I had kidney functionality between 35% and 45%, sometimes it reached 50%. Okay. So it was something that I had to always be careful about, because I knew that there was always a kidney problem. 17, type 1, pancreas. And I looked after myself from 17 until 22, 23 years old. I went into a denial stage between 23, and to answer your question, Tom, I think what I dislike, or I won't put it dislike, which I regretted, is the stage between 22 to 25 when my veins behind my eyes burst, and both burst at the same time. Had the laser ops, they saved my left eye, and I can still see today. So just going through that stage, from 25 onwards, I took care of myself. And leading to this age of 54, when complications hit my legs, and I went to the doctor, my endocrinologist, and I said, I've got pains in my legs. They gave me painkillers and blood thinner. That's all that they gave me. And what happened was that I got an infection in my right leg, and the pain was unbearable. And that's when everything started, where I went to the proper specialists, when they actually did the vascular scanning. And that's when they found out that the blood flow was poor, leading down to my foot.
What is the vascular scanning? Like what is the process?
What they actually do with the vascular scanning in the legs is they use, which they call a Doppler.
Oh, I know the Doppler.
That's right, yes. So what they actually do, there's certain points where they actually put, it's like a little mic, but I mean, it senses the flow of the blood and then you can actually hear the sounds of the flowing of the blood in the veins.
Wow, yes.
And they will tell me, "Mr. Hendricks, can you hear anything?" And I say, "No." They say, "There's the blockage." Then they move on, then you can hear it slightly, then there's no sound. So what they did was they, in August 2020, they did the bypass in my leg. So they did the vein transplant.
Okay.
And that didn't help at all because my body rejected the vein. September, they did the stents insertion. They did 36 stents insertions in my leg. And 2 weeks
Wow.
later, that also blocked up. And they were puzzled because my body rejected the vein transplant. It rejected every stent that they put in. And October, 2 days before the 19th, that's the 17th, when they told me, "What would you like, Mr. Hendricks? There's an option of amputation below knee or above knee." And I asked them, "If I have the below knee and there is complications at the below my knee with the veins, do I have to come for another amputation?" So they said, "Then you will have to come." I made my decision when I said, "Test the top part of my above my knee," as
And
we
your
say.
thigh, and your thigh, yeah.
And so they said that my blood is flowing like a normal person. So I made the decision on do the above knee because I don't want to come back. I don't want to have complications again. Mary, when they did that, after that was in October, November, I went for all my tests. My kidneys went up to 85%.
Wow.
My vision improved. My right leg, the coloring went back to normal.
Wow.
And it's still actually going back to normal because the blood flow was better in my body. So for me, the amputation was a blessing
Oh my
that.
word, I understand what you say now.
So everything improved after my amputation. But
Wow.
the emotional side of losing a limb was something, to answer that question of yours, Mary, it is something that I cried every night for 3 months.
Oh, Sally.
My wife and daughters live in Morocco. I had no support of my wife. My independence had to be in a rushful way because I didn't want to ask somebody to take me to my physiotherapy for my prosthetic leg fitting. So I did everything in 1 month after I came out of rehab. I started driving my car. I got sponsored with a hand control. I drove myself. I was active. I started gymming. Everything was for my independence.
Did
Everything.
that help you having forced you forced yourself to be independent,
Yeah,
didn't you?
but
Did that
the forcefulness actually led to an emotional breakdown where
Oh.
going to bed and not having support system at that stage led to me to a depression that my physiotherapist actually got worried. She made the booking for the psychologist because she couldn't stand what I was going through. I came in and I don't feel like doing physio. I cried. I left crying. I came home, got into bed crying. It wasn't an easy time, but it was a psychologist that actually deals with amputees. And 6 months with her was the best thing that could have ever happened to me in sharing what I really feel. And today it is something that I'm not shy of speaking. I went through the image stigma where I was actually shy of my body. How would people accept me? My wife still hasn't seen me up till today. I mean, you know, via WhatsApp and things because of COVID and the traveling. And I was planning on actually going this February to see my daughters and wife. And I don't know the emotional receiving from them to see me. This is my father. He's on crutches. He's on a prosthetic leg. He's in a wheelchair. Because when I left them in 2020, March, you know, I left as a whole person. But if I'm with people and they tell me, I'm always asking them the question, how do you see me? And they will tell me, they still see me as the whole Sally. And that is motivational for me.
Absolutely. Like, and I'm thinking as you're saying those words, I think all of us here actually see you as more.
And but the crying actually, that was actually a release that the psychologist told me. It was good that you cried. It was good that you went through that stage of crying, because if you bottled that up, it could have caused other complications. And I was actually happy that I did. I mean, sometimes I will still get into bed up till now and I will have this emotional, how can I say, roller coaster. And I will ball it out, you know. And if I look at myself with no leg and sometimes with a prosthetic leg, it is something that it is 2 years into it and I'm accepting it now.
So what does your world look? What does your world look like now? Like what? Like you? What networks have you got around you to help you? Now,
Mary, with the diabetes amputee community that I launched in Sweden, they don't see me as an amputee. They see me as the coach, the motivational person that comes in, or if I have my because most of them are not on the technology as well.
Yeah.
I've got the group of T1D moms with all the junior diabetics. And because of all my complications, I will direct them to the doctors, endocrinologists, specialists, so that they can ask the correct questions.
I understand.
And if they can't get it, they must insist on those doctors giving it over to them, even if they have to do the research. Because there's some doctors, for me, it is, I don't like to down a HCP or anybody. I mean, they're trying their best. But don't tell a patient that do this. But they don't know the after effects or the side effects of the emotional side, the medicines, what it's going to do. Because I was on a blood thinner. I was on a cholesterol tablet. But the side effects was actually causing me more harm with pain in my legs at the time when I was suffering with pains in my legs. So
yeah, and I'm still really kind of, I'm hearing you, I'm listening to you, and I'm asking you as well, like kind of like you're giving all this help, and I remember your talk at EASD and about when Tom was there as well, and talking about smoke signals, and I can connect, like, and I can see what like from that time you had with the psychologist and talking that. You see how important it is to talk it out.
It is. And just dealing or sharing. I mean, I meant Ken Tate as well. And he's also a psychologist or was psycho psychologist. I'm confused with the name. Sorry. Just the two of us speaking, you know, and delivering things that sometimes the patient don't want to speak everything. And that's important. Don't hold things back when you're with your psychologist. Because once if you release everything to them, they know how to actually guide you, because both psychologists that I actually saw, they actually say, they actually, the words that came out of their mouths were, "We cannot help you. You have to help yourself. We are here to guide you. We are here to assist you. We are here to support you." You know?
And how, like, I'm thinking of that time where we had the amputation on the, was it the 19th of October? And how did you feel that day? Like, before you got that help, like, and what did that feel like?
You know, when I came out of, this is what the nurse actually said, where, "Mr. Hendricks, we know that you asked for," which they call the anesthesia, where you said, "I want a nice cocktail. I'm going in here and I want to sleep through the operation and I want to wake up at 4:30. And just before 4:30, I woke up because it was starting to wear off.
Yeah.
And the blissful feeling that I had was, my body is now full of the drugs that is stopping the pain and things. But as the anesthetic actually wore off, I felt no pain. It went on to around about 9 p.m. the evening, and I still had no pain. And I saw the nurse, and I said, the anesthetic actually wore off and things. And so she asked, "Oh, do you need painkillers?" I said, "No, I don't, because there is no pain."
So your leg, your lower leg was giving you pain, more pain than
anything else. And it was something that I can't describe, that feeling when, or the next morning when I woke up and I still had no pain.
Wow.
Because of the amputation, my healing took up, you can say, plus minus 5 days. I was transferred to the rehab center after that.
What was that like?
The rehab, when I actually came into the rehab center, excuse me, and they just said to me, "We're going to give you hell here." That was all, you know? And I looked at the nurse and I said, "I accept the challenge," you know? And I made, in that 2 weeks, you have to actually do exercises. You have to do walking up steps with your crutches, cycling, just to your stamina, like standing on your left, like in my left leg, for a long time to balance yourself. So I left with a good report. I came home. I could do things for myself. The first thing that I actually asked in the rehab was, "Please teach me how to use the toilet." That was all, you know.
Oh, gosh, and I never thought, actually, it would be a bit tricky for you.
You know, how to get, you know, because, I mean, there's certain toilets that won't have the rails like the hospital, you know.
Yeah.
And coming home, I didn't have the rails, but I could actually lift myself up from the which I'll just say plainly, the toilet pot, mm-hmm. in the way that they taught me how to get up, you know.
Yes, yeah.
And it was easy for me to actually do it, you know. And
just knowing the way.
That's right. Just on the way that you maneuver your body, you know.
Yeah, but, and like, I'm I'm just thinking, like, when you know, when something happened, and I'm going to speak as if my life is so charmed. Like, if you've hurt your arm, just hurt your arm, and it's in a bandage, and you can't use it, and you realize what you use your arm for when you can't use it.
Yeah.
What do you use your right leg for that you couldn't, you like that, like, aside from the normal walk and things like that? I'm just, there's things we don't realize we do with all our bits of our body. Is that
now,
a silly question?
No, not at all. Because I am actually, which they call right-sided, so my dominant foot was my right leg. Okay? So on the stationary cycling cycle machine, it's easy. But when I bought myself my bicycle, and I thought to myself, this I'm going to do. And you have to, because when you come to a stop street, my right leg went off first.
Yes.
And that's just the leg that is amputated. I had to train myself to actually keep my prosthetic leg on and taking my left leg to balance myself and actually giving my prosthetic leg the force to actually drive, to move the bicycle forward, you know, with the pedal.
I understand.
So everything was an adjustment for me. So my driving as well, because they wanted me to change to an automatic car. And I said, my left leg I can still use on the clutch. With my hand controls, I will be accelerating and braking. So why must I change to an automatic car, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was all a challenge at the beginning, but it became a norm. It became a norm.
Yeah, you said, like, you sound so positive about it, and I know that there's, like, there's a veil beneath, like, the having being an amputee and having diabetes as well, and I'm surprised, I'm genuinely surprised about your positivity, and I feel so much better about complications the way you're talking about it. But do you, with, I suppose I want you to talk about the stigma of it as well, and the diabetic amputee community, and why you set that up as well. Can you talk about that a little bit?
The stigma or the body image, which I actually had to overcome myself. Okay. Being on your own, okay, your spouse, your daughters, as on the other side of the continent, I won't say the world, yeah, because I mean they're in the north of Africa, in Morocco. So it is something that, how will they actually see you? Okay, if I give my talks in front of the EAP program, wellness programs, I don't use my prosthetic leg. If I go to meetings, I don't put on my prosthetic leg so that they can see me with my assistive device, my crutches, and my amputation. With the prosthetic leg, sometimes I don't wear a short pants. So when I actually go on, like I've been on the television, on shows, on health shows, I actually will ask the producer, can I wear shorts? Do I have to wear long pants? Because I don't want the people, I don't want to hide it.
Yeah.
You know? And this is how I actually overcame the body image. I went for coffee now the other day, and a little boy was standing behind me, and I could hear him whispering to his father, you know? And I turned around and I told his father, don't shush him. Can I answer him? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I explained to him what happened. And he actually, when I came out with my coffee, and then he actually thanked me and said, thank you for sharing your story. You know?
Yeah.
Because in my mind, I actually wanted to tell him, oh, I wanted to be a pirate. You know? But I thought to myself, no. Tell him the truth. Tell him about what happened. You know, And I think he appreciated the truth more than what I wanted to tell him about me being a pirate or wanting to be a pirate, you know? So I thought to myself, I wanted to use that line to actually break the ice, you know, if people look at you and they don't know how to approach you. I mean, at the beginning, friends, they didn't know how to phone. If they wanted to call me, they wanted to cry on the phone. So I said, why cry? You know, it's an amputation, you know. So it is something that I've accepted. The complications, I won't say it's gone. It is just being, I won't even say dampened. The complications are still there, but it's how I actually manage everything on a day-to-day basis.
And
the emotional side, you know, everything.
Like hearing that story and hearing how you approach like somebody who might, who you might think is going to say something negative about your leg and how you dealt with that. Like how do you think we can do better with what we
if people come with negative talks, okay, it is something that I actually invite. So bring the negative talk. For example, on one topic where they blame you, oh, it's your fault that you've got an amputation. It's your fault that you've got diabetes. You ate too much sweets. You ate too much this. You were obese, you know. And I actually wait until they actually finish because I don't like to interrupt.
Yeah. So that
I can just see what information or what education have you got from diabetes or people or your research. Or
I love that.
You know.
Yeah.
So I wait till they finish speaking so that I can actually educate them better. So that I can explain to them, do you know your biology of your body? You know, how does your pancreas work? How does your liver work? Where is sugar or the glucose stored in your body?
Gosh, and Sally, you're such a grown up.
You know, so I will tell them, your liver stores glucose. Your muscles stores glucose. Your kidneys stores glucose. In the morning, if you stand up, you don't use any other glucose but your muscle glucose. Once, if your body is up and it needs more, now the liver releases glucose. That's why we have the dawn phenomenon where, you know, you can test your sugar now. Oh, it's nice. It's 4.2. Just move around without eating and you see, oops, there my sugar spike, you know. We that actually use sensors, we can scan up to 40 times a day, you know, like Gary was saying. And it is something that you don't realize where your body stores the glucose. So educating him on how the body functions. I'm a type 1. I don't produce insulin. You know, I can become insulin resistant like a type 2.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the education which I gave this one person. And with his arrogance, when he started off, you know, about blaming, I waited.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, now let me educate him.
I mean,
he took my hand and he thanked me. And he said, now I have a better understanding of diabetes because you explained type 1, type 2, MODY, LADY, 3C, type 1.5, you name them, you know?
Yeah.
So educating somebody in the nicest of ways, even if he attacked you, that's why I don't let stigmatize, you know?
I know. Yeah. Like, it's like two negatives, like a double.
That's right. Yes.
What do you think? Like the role of the community is with like social stigmas and things. Like what? Like, you know, like healthcare professionals and the media. Like what? What? What are their role in all this?
Just on that point, I actually fired my endocrinologist,
Oh, gee.
and she came in the first day, and the first question that came out of her mouth, not asking me, "How are you, Sally?" She asked me, "Is your medical insurance going to pay for all of these things?"
Wow.
And I looked at her and I said to her, "Doctor, you're fired."
Oh my gosh, that, sorry, I don't know other reaction but to laugh there. That was
She
ridiculous.
looked at me and it's like, "Who's going to take care of you?" So I said, "Another doctor, another one. There's many
Love
more, you know."
Gobsmacked. You Alan Sugar'd that doctor.
I
Good
love
on you,
it.
Sally.
I know.
You know, Tom, Mary, it was something that I didn't know where it came from, but I just realized at that moment she didn't ask me, "How are you doing this morning?" The first thing she worried about was her money.
Yeah, wow.
You know?
That's outrageous, isn't it? And we speak about things like this where you go into appointments and it's like you're looking at data and your numbers and things like that. And we spoke about this so many times in the
Here
diabetes
we go.
chat. There is so much more to that. We are not numbers, we are humans. They need to be asking us how we're feeling emotionally and mentally and yeah, not just look at them numbers because there's more to it. And
There's more.
the
You know, and this is what I try to get across now at this stage to all the groups which I actually not oversee, but which I actually joined in a way of I want to motivate them. But Mary, there was one question that I want to answer in another way. Dealing with diabetics or diabetic amputees, and there is so much suicidal thoughts that goes through their heads. I even had a case where a 14-year-old boy couldn't handle his diabetes anymore, where he wanted to commit suicide. His mother phoned me, and just talking to him, I brought him down to a level of acceptance, and I said, "Life is more than this diabetes that we've got. We've got to
You
live."
know, I know of, I know of two families here that have their separate families, and their children have talked about death and taking their own lives, and they're like single figures. They don't even know what it's like. You'd think that they don't even know what it's about, but
And I
they.
mean, you know, just on this diabetes, I mean, I'm also with a group with divorced parents, you know, on how to handle a diabetic that is going to go to two different houses every month, you know,
Oh,
or
yes.
so it's a group of mothers that they're from the USA, you know. Which I also coach with motivational speaking. And because it's not that I was divorced twice. So my children's not diabetic, but I could relate their feelings and my journey of a diabetic. And I actually put it into one story, you know, just looking how they suffered and how I suffered as a diabetic. They suffering as a divorced child, which terminology and my diabetic journey, and I put it together and I thought to myself, I hope this is going to make sense. And it actually made sense on helping them on, I said, stipulate all your things in your divorce procedures on how he must look after your daughter or your son, how, you know, it is, you have to have insulin in both houses. If she's running short, you have to check her pump. You have to look at the data. Both of you have to have watches so that you can actually see what the readings are. So it is something that I just told them, put everything down on paper. And it's
I can
actually
relate to
helped
that
me though.
actually.
And it's actually,
I can
yeah.
pers
So it's actually helping them in that way. So it's not just I'm doing diabetic work. I'm actually I'm helping people to live. I'm
Yeah, you're
helping
doing
people
empathic work.
to actually cope with life in general, not just diabetes. So if I wake up in the morning, Mary Tom, it is something that I don't think about. It is mechanical already. I wake up, I do my tester, if I've got my sensor on, whatever, I check it, inject myself, and then my day goes on. So it is not a constant checking up on my diabetes, because I always said I don't want to get anxiety again. So I don't want to get technology anxiety. I don't want to get depression. I don't want to get anything because of diabetes. So I take life in a way of live it, Sally. That is it. Live it.
I think, yeah, live it. I can relate to like your ability to be empathic with that group of women too. I'm a parent of a child with type 1, and I also have type 1, and it'll maybe bring me on to another topic too, but I understand that type 1, like diabetes, not in my body, managing it, not it, out of my body, in somebody else's body that I care about. There are things we do ourselves that we don't even realize that we do, not because they're from habit necessarily, because it just takes life to upset that habit and then it doesn't work.
That's
But
right, yeah.
it's all fine till it's not fine. But with children, you have to have things in place.
You have to.
And yeah, and like on that, like Tom gave me great notes, right? And I don't know if you've seen the picture of the notes, like, but he, when I saw this line, I thought, oh my gosh, like I don't even know what I think about this anymore. But I know that you don't call yourself a type one.
Yeah, I
What?
don't like to.
Can you tell me why? Not me. I'm not the only one here. I just realized I'm not the only one here.
It's just the word inclusion.
Yeah.
So, if I go onto a platform, I will introduce myself. I'm Sally Hendricks. I'm a diabetic. That is it. I won't say I'm type one or type two. If they're in the group as well, I've trained them in a way of don't use type one or type two. Just I'm diabetic or I have diabetes.
Yeah.
So that we are included in a way, or inclusion was my first in 2020 after, after the amputation. That was my drive for the whole of 2021, was inclusion. In a way of diabetes, because of the NCDs. And I did a presentation on NCDs and diabetes. And everything that is listed under the NCDs are actually in the diabetic list as well of complications. Except for, I mean, okay, in South Africa, we've got a little bit more under our NCDs, but not diabetic related, like alcohol syndrome and all of these things, cerebral palsy. But there is just certain things when I actually excluded and I said NCDs and diabetes, how can you differ between these two? We know that diabetes falls under NCDs. And this is just something that I brought up with being on WHO as well, because it was the NCD's hard talk. And bringing these things up and that presentation at the WHO NCD hard talk was something that they didn't think of.
I know, I'm
It's
not,
always, yeah. So I brought up a lot of things. And then when I spoke on the WHO platform about assistive devices, and it was actually more for amputees, but I said, I am a diabetic amputee. I will use a pump, which will be an assistive device. I will use a CGM or FGM. I will use all of those things as an assistive device. A
Yes.
crutch is an assistive device. A wheelchair is an assistive device. And again, if you're thinking of assistive devices, for me, Sally Hendricks, as a diabetic amputee, I'll be needing all of those. And again, they didn't know how to answer because don't use terminology for one. Okay, assistive devices, no. That's only crutches, wheelchairs, and your walker. But if you add diabetic, then the list will grow, it will become longer. So it is just things that you tend to think on the broader lines of what does a diabetic amputee actually need, or what does a diabetic need? So we have to reclassify things because I'm working on one project now where I'm trying to bring the diabetic world with all our medicines and our assistive devices to the amputee orthopedic world as a diabetic amputee is all one. So with Medtronic, Ottobock, Abbott, it is something which they have to think about in the long run. If
Like,
if there's no preventative measures taken to prevent amputations,
exactly.
then yeah, then there is a broader list of assistive devices.
And like, so, oh, yeah, no, I'm understanding things so much better. Like, and I know that there is a resource issue, like money, all those things,
Yeah, there is.
for, and the diabetes community is large to
It is.
encompass everything, but it is about prevention, and technologies like will reduce those risks for these type for complications. And Parthakar talks about like taking out of the pot for complications to pay for technologies. And I know he's doing this first for type one and sensor technology for type two. Those that have type two and use multiple insulin doses. But at the end of the day, it's technology for all. It's just a resource issue. And
That's
it's
right. That's
and
right.
and it's
I
yeah.
mean, I mean, with the diabetic groups that I belong to, that rides from South Africa up to the north of Africa, and the amount of people that are diabetics on the continent of Africa, and between, or we can say, between South Africa and the north of Africa, everybody is surviving on the basic technology. And that is the technology of insulin. That's all.
That's it. And today
Some
we're
of
at
some,
Insulin Day.
there we go. Some of them don't even have glucose monitors. So the intake of insulin will always be guided on, don't take your full dosage now. Why? Because of the weather. I mean, the weather plays havoc on my sugar levels, where it drops continuously.
Wow.
And that is between January, February, and March. That is our three hottest months. Like, I've been battling with the lows of between 2.9, 3.4, and it doesn't want to go higher than that, no matter how I reduce my insulin. And having a meeting with Medtronic tomorrow will be some blissfulness, where I will test out my G7, and if I get my pump, I will be able to see how or what my intake is, or what the usage is actually or needed for
Yeah,
my body,
you can't
you
take
know.
out your background insulin, whereas you can stop your pump from delivering you like insulin for
That's
a short
right, this,
time.
yeah.
Yeah, of
Yeah, good.
course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting project working with the prosthetic companies and Medtronics and Dexcom to actually bring all of these things together. Because sometimes, like I've been listening to you with the loop system and things, I don't understand anything over the loop system because I haven't had a pump in my life, you know? So
Yeah.
even going to the technology conferences like ATTD, I wouldn't understand anybody's terminology. And I can say, I'm very frank about it. If somebody's speaking and I say, please, can you explain to me? You know, because I've never used the pump.
And
Because,
we've little I also work for JDRF actually. There's little animations
okay.
that I'll send them to you actually. I'll send you a link to them that you can have a look at, and they might be useful in out in the community because
Thanks.
they're short and they're simple and they're on YouTube, so you can even whatever languages you can change on YouTube, you can subtitle them to into another language than English. But they might be useful, and they literally explain the system in a very simple way.
Okay.
I'll send you those.
No.
Sally,
Thanks. I do. Sorry.
what would, because we're talking about like complications and like and I don't know how you've done it, but you've talked about complications in such a positive way. I'm surprised that I'm not crying, and I'm not. I feel really strong about it, and I don't know if anybody else does, but you're the like your bravery. I'm going to say your bravery. I can even translate to normal diabetics wearing technology and being terrified to wear technology because of the stigma that like people will judge them or think there's something wrong when actually just wear it and listen to the negatives and
My
then
dad's a prime example of that, actually, Mary.
really, Norman?
Yeah, he won't wear a sensor. He's quite an old-fashioned man, if that's the
Yeah.
best word to describe it, kind of set in his ways.
Lovely.
Doesn't really want to accept that he's diabetic because he thinks like there's going to be a stigma on it and stuff like
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of tips and advice would you give somebody who's struggling with complications or stigma or like being afraid to be themselves, whatever themselves is?
If you actually look at the broader side of that question, it actually goes as far as, like, for example, Norman just mentioned now, if his father believes in that way, we have to respect it. Okay? It could be like with the groups that I actually deal with, where they're in front of other diabetics, but they shy away of actually injecting themselves. So there is something that I will always, when I speak to them, is getting to know the person's background, and how they, for example, how the parents actually treat them. Like, inject yourself in the toilet, don't show it, don't do this.
Yes.
And if that is actually the way they actually grew up, so coming to the age of 20, 25, 30, they still have that inside of them. So it's been instilled to have a respect for other people, not to show what you have. But because of that, the stigma becomes greater. So for me, when I actually listen to them, so we have, which they call open talk, okay?
Yeah.
And I have the open talk one-on-one so that nobody listens. So I will ask them, how does your parents treat you? Be open with me. You know, oh, my mother nags me. I can't eat this and I can't eat that. And I tell them, eat it. If you want that apple or the toffee apple with a lovely red toffee around it, have it. But see what happens afterwards. So you let that diabetic child experience the feeling, but we as parents just have to monitor closely. So if they start, if they see their readings going up, 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 and say, can you see what's happening now? Now we have to balance. Now we have to check this. Now we have to wait for so many hours. We were supposed to be at the park, but now you decide to eat the toffee apple. So I go in a way of experience the things that you want to see what happens so that you can experience the happening.
Yeah, and then you can make choices.
That's right. Then the choice become theirs.
Yes.
Of, oops, I will stay away from a toffee apple. I know what happened last time.
Or,
you know, but if you tell them what's going to happen, a child is curious.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so absolutely. Absolutely.
Cut them off a toffee apple. Can you know? Wait, hold on. Now we have to go on to the, you know, the pump and see what the movements, bollocks now and things, whatever. And it is something, let them experience it. So for me, I let every diabetic that's in the groups that I actually oversee, I let them experience what they want to experience. But I'm there to actually guide them, and I'm there to catch them. Mm-hmm. And I'll always use the word, I'm there to catch you. And then I use my word of with peer support.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Sally, we've got some amazing comments coming through tonight on the hashtag and on the page. Belinda has sent loads and loads of comments from your discussion, and one that she just posted now is, she says, I absolutely agree with Sally. Listen to the individual, acknowledge how they want to manage their diabetes, provide the options, but do diabetes their way. This is so important if we want to allow people to strengthen their self-determination. Absolutely. Wow. Hits it on the nail.
Wow, that is beautiful. Thanks. Wow.
I've learned so much tonight, Sally, and I really appreciate it. And something I was thinking, I've been thinking about myself all weekend, about how change happens in our lives, and just in my work, and we're talking about change management and like moving different. You work in Microsoft, and like we've moved from Google Workspace to Microsoft, and it's a challenge, like just even doing things like that. Like, and but we're bodies going around constantly, like working in change management and like managing ourselves through change constantly. And how what is it about yourself that helps you get through that? Like, because I'm fascinated, because I was literally out for this is going to sound really privileged as well. I was out for my second run this year. And do you run? Can you run with your leg? Or you can cycle and all. I know.
Yeah. I can cycle, and there is which they call the blade.
Yeah.
Okay, I've actually tried it, but because of my weakening stump, and what actually happens is my stump shrinks too fast during the day. In the morning, like, excuse me, they will always tell you, when you buy a shoe, buy it in the morning, and I never understood that. Because your feet is at its biggest, or the best swelling of your legs or feet is actually in the morning.
Oh.
If you buy shoes in the afternoon and you take a size half smaller or a size smaller, because that's the shoe that fits you, but tomorrow morning when you put it on, you can't get your foot into the shoe.
I've learned another thing.
And that is the same thing that happens with me with my socket.
Right.
My stump will be at its best fitting in the morning until about, say, 12:30, and then my stump reduces after 1-ish, and then my socket becomes too big. And being a diabetic, it actually happens faster. So I reduce, my stump reduces, between, you can say, 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock. So then I don't get the true fitting of the socket. So I have to add a, which they call a stump sock, to get
Yeah.
my volume. So these are all the things that I actually went through, and we tested the blade. I went onto the running machine, and I just said no, running is not for me then, but cycling, that is better, because I'll be able to control myself better.
Gotcha.
And so gymming, exercising, doing sport, as a diabetic amputee, I can't do it for long periods. And I will do everything in the morning, not in the afternoon.
Oh, I
So that,
gotcha.
yeah. So if I do gymming, I'll do everything in the morning. If there's a sport that must be played, I'll do it in the morning so that I can have maximum fit to my socket.
Do you think it, like
And
I find it's better for diabetes as well, like in the morning too, but for me anyway. Yeah. Is there
So I find the sports, gymming and everything for me, with the running and the introduction to the blade, as they call it. It is not the foot. So I don't know if you all know Oster Pretorius from South Africa that had the double blades. So it was one
Yes,
of
yes,
So
yes.
it was it's those blades that I actually tested, and to my satisfaction, I tried it, but it's not for me.
Oh, I
You
see.
know? Yeah.
I have one more question for you, and
Okay, go
it's
ahead. Go
so.
ahead.
Do you know when I was like, do you know when you're diagnosed? And lot there are lots of stories out there, and when you're diagnosed with diabetes, and this didn't happen to me, but you're taken down into like the amputee ward. And is there anything about having complications that you wish you knew when you were like younger? Could is like do you know they try and teach us by showing us scary things, but not showing us people. Like in like you're telling us your story, but these are people you don't know or haven't heard their story about, but is there something that you wished you knew about younger? Because it's
Just knowing, like for example, with my kidney complications, my kidney complications led to hypertension. And so,
Oh, I understand why. Yeah, okay. Because you can't concentrate the
So
urine. I know,
that's right. So
yeah.
the thing is that if they ask me, what complications don't you have? Then I tell them I have everything.
We didn't even talk about your eyes.
I've got the vascular problems, the thinning of the veins, the kidneys. I've got arthritis, diabetes arthritis. I've got the diabetes trigger fingers. When you wake up in the morning and all your fingers are stiff or they skew, you can't straighten them. The eyes. So it is something that I've got. I'm one package, as to say, of diabetes,
You're a beautiful
and
human.
so if somebody comes to me, it's not that I am a Mr. Know-it-all, but I won't tell them unless they tell me, I've got a kidney complication, or I'm suffering from hypertension. Why? So if they don't understand how the kidneys work for pressure in your body and the hypertension, I try to make them understand.
Oh, I get
You
you.
know, so the kidneys regulate the pressure in your blood pressure in your body. So that the kidney is actually very important. So at 35% or 20%, you can have high blood pressure all the time. But if your kidneys are not looked after, so look after your kidneys and your pressure will be okay. Don't stress because you're putting strain on your kidneys. It is something that I've learned over the years of what does the organ actually do in our bodies, And I will speak with my sons as well, And we will compare, compare arguments, So it is just something that with a new diagnosed patient, I would tell them if they do come into my peer support group, have you gone for all the checks? You know,
Yeah.
did they do that organ? Did they do that organ? So that if every organ is actually affected, then we know how to approach things. If it's only one organ, we know how to approach it. So over this 40 years of being a diabetic, knowing myself, and it's again, one size does not fit all. What I've actually tried over the years with homeopathic medicines and with my insulins and natural medicines to see if everything's working okay. And so if somebody comes to me and tell me, have you tried homeopathic medicines or natural medicines? And I would tell them, yes, I have. But all the homeopathic doctors and the natural doctors, if they speak to me, they will tell me, don't go off your insulin. Use it in combination or in conjunction with everything. And the natural medicines actually take long to work. So you have to do it for years. So like I've been doing olive oil and lemon juice for 14 years. So it regulates everything. It's been working beautifully with my insulin, you know? And
Does it do anything good for your kidneys?
yeah, it does.
Okay.
I can't, lemon water, I can't do every day because the amount of acid, when you're drinking the lemon, it is a alkaline, but once it's in the body, it turns into acid, you know? So we have to be very careful because our acid level, DKA, that can happen very quickly.
I understand, yeah.
So, yeah, so we have to be very careful of acidy things, you know, it can trigger the DKA in another way, and your blood becoming acid, you know. So,
Yeah.
these are all the things that we have to be so careful, but the right education has to go out there
Yeah,
and
it
actually
all goes back
edit.
to education, though. Like it
Yeah,
does
it does. It
with
does. It
stigma,
does. Yeah.
with like complications.
Patients
With
and the people, they shy away from complications. And this is what I'm trying to bring, Tom, with Action Year 2023. It is something that I'm trying to achieve it. And if I do, it's good. If I tried this year and I only succeed in 2024, it's also good. It is
yeah.
something prevention I'm busy with. It is something the foot care in diabetics. So organizations to set up free foot care in South Africa so that the ulcers can be seen too quick enough. It is just a lot of things that I'm putting into action for the prevention of an amputation. And this is driving me crazy because everything is taking so slowly. But like one person actually, Dr. Ruben, told me, patience, Sally, patience. That's all.
You're getting there, like
It
between the screening and the eye screening and the vascular screening as
scans
well,
too.
like the
Yeah.
scanning with the Doppler, and like they're simple things, aren't they? Like they're not like you can help so many, you can find so many people.
And once you do the scanning, the screening, and then we'll refer them to the specialists or the doctors or their preferred GP or preferred specialist that they've been dealing with, just to verify everything on paper with blood tests, you know.
Yeah, Tom, do you want to come in? I've totally hogged you, Sally. I'm really sorry, and I know Tom wants to ask you about. I was going to like go in and talk about peer support, but like I'm not allowed to do that. Okay, and I've just hogged you for ages, and thank you so much.
That's a pleasure. It's
What
a real pleasure.
I just can't even put it into words, guys. What a powerful chat that was with you, Mary and Sally. I'm just totally mesmerized by it. Like your positive attitude, Sally, is just tremendous. You are so religion, like your passion to help people. We've got some lovely comments coming through. Thankfully, you were there to help that young lad. You've got such a positive attitude. And Josh says, thank you for sharing your story. Honestly, you give out
It's a
such a
pleasure.
positive energy when you speak. So I just wanted to just maybe just round up for the next maybe 5 minutes or so, talking about peer support. Obviously, we met in Stockholm, and it was such a honor for me to be out there to represent Diabetes Chat and to tell everyone what we're about. We're about this. We're about you, people like you, Sally, who come on and share these amazing stories and experiences and raise awareness. And that's what it's all about. I'm talking and normalizing things. You know, I could keep going and going and listening, but
Right.
we had a great opportunity to talk as well. But I want to just take a minute or two. What does peer support mean to you? And can you maybe just share us a little bit about the community that you set up, and what was the reason behind it? The diabetic amputee community. When did you set up? Why did you set it up? And sort of what support is available for your community members? And do you meet in person, online? And just finally, is there anything that you're working on right now or in the coming year for your community?
Peer support for me is the comfort zone. If we go to our HCPs and we walk into the surgery or the office, our blood pressure goes up. Everything goes wrong. If they do an ECG, the heart rate is this and whatever. So the comfort zone in 2020 was when COVID came in and everything was stopped because everybody was scared of getting COVID. And just by going to the rehab center, there we formulated a little group, and that actually inspired me to formulate a support group, but peer support. And we started chatting at the rehab, and we actually shared our innermost darkest secrets of actually moving forward in life and what and how we could actually help each other with our lived experience. And this just triggered something, and I thought to myself, let me do this diabetic amputee community in South Africa. And it is from Cape Town to Johannesburg, PE, Bloemfontein, Kimberley. So that is all around South Africa. And we actually help each other. We will actually. Manner of not downing HCPs, but why can't they treat us the way we treat each other with respect? And the respect became the comfort zone. The peer support grouping became a family group, that it is some place where we feel comfortable, we can confide in each other. If we've got marital problems, if we've got erectile dysfunction problems, we can't perform with our wives because we're diabetics. So these are all the topics that actually comes up in the peer support. And leading from the diabetic amputee community and coming back from Sweden, I didn't know who was actually watching at that moment. From South Africa. It was the T1D moms that was watching. It was other amputees, not diabetics, that wanted support. And We formulated all of these groups in silo groups because for respect. But when I came out with inclusion in 2021 and moving into acceptance and inclusion in 2022, and 2023 is the action year that we will be actioning the talks that we had in 2021 and 2022. So all of these things that we've actually formulated and spoke about in our groups, we want to make one inclusive group that we support all NCDs in a way forward of action in 2023. And it is just amazing on who actually joined us. It is the blind diabetics, the deaf diabetics. Where they came out of the closet, I don't know. I mean, for me, meeting a blind diabetic and a deaf diabetic was something that it was beyond my imagination, because I always thought that they hid him in the closet forever. But they all came out. And they came out in a beautiful
Wow.
way, in a beautiful way. So this is our peer support with the comfort zone, and we are family.
We are family, indeed. So, Sally, just to finish then, where can people get in touch with you? Whether they're an amputee themselves or just want to reach out to you and talk, like, how can people learn more about you and your community, and yeah, what's the best
Okay,
way?
the best way on LinkedIn, then I'm LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, it's all just Sally Hendricks. You know, on Twitter, I'm Sally underscore Hendricks. So if they do search, they can just search. I have a, which I call African Diabetic Awareness. So that's another platform, not platform, sorry, user ID, which I use to share the awareness as well. But mostly with Sally Hendricks. Mostly with Sally Hendricks, yeah. So everybody, if they want to get in touch with me, they can DM me or reach me on Instagram, like most of the people, and then I will take them over to my link page. And there they can actually see what I actually do, so that I let them actually read up everything, so that it is not that Sally Hendricks is a hocus pocus, you know, type of guy that will just talk a lot. But again, it is something that we're actioning in 2023. So Facebook, link, Instagram, Twitter, I'm available.
Wow. Thank you so much, Ali, for your time this evening
It's a pleasure.
in coming on, and we're just it's been just a tremendous honor to have you come on and share your diabetes journey with us, the 40 incredible years, and sharing the complications that have happened over them years, and just the positive attitude you have in it, and helping other people and wanting to educate. And like you said, when that boy in the queue was sort of curious about it and you spoke up to him, it's them sort of things. I just literally are so grateful that you were able to come on tonight and share everything with us. So thank you so much.
That's a
Keep up the
pleasure.
amazing work that you're doing.
Thank
But
you.
from me and the Diabetes Chat community, like we're so honored to have you here. And Mary, like what a sensational chat. Thank you to you, like literally for just smashing that amazing chat with Sally.
Sally, you're so easy to talk to.
It was a real pleasure. Real pleasure.
I could talk for
Thank you.
hours, but
I know.
the electricity meter might run out soon,
No,
so
that cell would just be empty.
Ha
Thank you so much.
I've spoken the 2 hours, and our electricity just came back on now. So I'm back online, like you can see.
Oh my gosh! Go make a cup of tea.
Put the kettle on.
I really think I need that. But thank you for having me on Diabetes Chat. It was a real honor for sharing this with you, and it is just a pleasure.
You're always welcome back anytime.
Well, thank you.